against Syria, all around the country in Syria, and also in the south of Lebanon. The Israelis haven't left the south of Lebanon. And Hezbollah is seemingly showing a lot of self-restraint, respecting the ceasefire agreement. But what is the Lebanese government doing right now?
Well, at the moment, you have to understand, we don't have a strong army in the sense that our army is not strategically armed. It doesn't have proper weapons to fight the Israeli occupation with. So the Lebanese government is going through diplomatic channels, trying to pressure the world, to pressure the Israelis to stop. But of course, I mean, after nearly 7 years of Israeli occupation of Lebanese territories as well, diplomacy brought us nowhere. It was only through the acts of resistance against Israeli occupation that the Lebanese managed to push the Israelis out from most of southern Lebanon back in the year 2000. The Israelis are back to not only bombarding and occupying parts of southern Lebanon, but also threatening again, today we heard them, threatening to bombard Beirut, the capital Beirut, and continue with their action, breaching UN Security Council Resolution 1701 to take over more land and to eliminate Lebanese people. As recent as this morning, the Israelis basically continued to bombard South Lebanon. Yesterday, they killed more than two people in South Lebanon by bombarding their car. And they basically, they always claim that it's terrorists that are being hit. Most of those were civilians and children as well. You have to understand they do the same thing in Syria and the same thing in Gaza. So for the Israeli occupation, they don't need an excuse. But at the end of the day, they don't even, I mean, like, they don't want to stick to any agreement or anything else. So we're just sitting there as sitting duck because our government cannot support us. The resistance, on the other hand, is sticking to the ceasefire agreement to show the world that we can actually fight the Israelis like we did over the past 15 months. But at the same time, we want to show you that the Israelis are the ones breaching anything. So by us sticking to the ceasefire agreement and the Israelis breaching it, it shows the world who the real monster is. The Israelis are using internal operatives to shoot missiles from South Lebanon against the Israeli entity. This is what they claim today, and this is what they claimed a few days back, just to blame it on the resistance. And the resistance came out and said, it's not us. The Lebanese army actually investigated the matter. Turned out that one of the refugees in Lebanon actually was the one behind launching these missiles, and they're looking into Zionist ties with that person.
Right, as you just said, Leila, what seems to be, these ceasefires seem to be just one way, and the Israelis are... whenever they breach them, whenever they feel like it, and that is just not acceptable. I wonder how the international community still stands that. Let us get the second report from on the ground. We have Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, Press TV's correspondent in Tehran right now. Tell me, Gisu Jan, what is happening around you? Everybody's waiting to get your report.
Well, I am located in front of Tehran University. Now, this is where all of the roads, where the rally in Tehran is taking place or leading to. As you can see behind me, the streets are flooded with people who are out here once again to express their support for the Palestinians, particularly this year as leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, mentioned that this year's Al-Quds rally is even more significant than ever. Considering the events in the past couple of years, the bloodshed of the Israelis, the atrocity and the genocide going on in Gaza, the people that you see here are once again out on the streets to express their full support for the Palestinians by chanting slogans in support of them, chanting slogans against the Israeli regime, calling death to Israel, and of course, its staunch ally, the United States. So basically, as you can see, once again, Iranians are out there to express their full support. Now, what's significant this year is the number of the younger people that you see out on the streets, out here with their parents. And I've talked to a couple of these young people, asking them. It's interesting for me to see how awareness has risen in Iran, particularly among the Generation Z, who are quite aware of what's happening in the world, and they are fully cognizant of the atrocities that are underway right now in Palestine, in the occupied territories, particularly in Gaza, and the fact that they're also offering their full support is showing that this movement is moving from one generation to another, and it is becoming stronger. your program. This is a movement that was initiated by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Imam Khomeini. And of course, the fact that after nearly 5 decades, the movement is even stronger than ever sends a very important message to the world. And the fact that a movement that was initiated by Iran is now being observed by people all over the world, in different parts of the world, in different countries that are not necessarily even Muslim, also is a very significant result of the movement that was initiated by Imam Khomeini.
Right, Kisra, as you said here, this is a very, very loud and clear show of support and solidarity with the people with the people of Palestine and Gaza. Kisra, tell me something. I can see right behind you, huge crowd is there, but I can see they're walking in different directions, the opposite directions. Are they joining the main crowd in the back right now? Can you take a look and tell me what's happening right behind you?
Well, as you can see, people are holding the flags of the Hezbollah resistance movement. Of course, the yellow flags, the colors of the Hezbollah movement are also right here, very prominent. They're also holding the flag of Gaza. The reason why you see people walking in different directions is because I'm exactly at the vantage point, if you will. This is where people from different parts of Tehran eventually arrive at. There are eight different routes for people who want to take part in the Quds rallies in Tehran, which is the biggest rally in Iran. And all of those eight routes eventually lead to the point where I'm standing, which is right in front of Tehran University. And the reason why you see people coming from all directions is exactly that. And of course, they will be settling down in a few hours to listen to the speech, which will be, of course, the Friday prayers. And they will be taking part in the Friday prayers, and they will be listening to the Friday prayer speech, which is, again, another significant event today.
Thank you, Gisu, for your report. We'll, of course, join you in our next connections also to know more about what is happening. It was really, really interesting. Do you know who is going to give a speech? Is it going to be the Parliament Speaker?
That is what we've been told, and we're expecting to listen to his address, Bahman. And of course, like I said, this year's Al-Quds rally is even more significant. The fact that you see so many people in the streets in the Iranian capital in and of itself speaks thousands of words. So probably even more important than the Friday prayer speech that we will be listening to is the fact that in the midst of the Nowruz holidays, because as you know, this year, the holy month of Ramadan has coincided with the Iranian New Year season and Nowruz holidays. The huge crowd that you see here in Tehran and, of course, in other cities across the country are actually spending their New Year holidays here expressing solidarity with Palestinians. This is not something that you would probably see in other parts of the world, because New Year's season is usually a time to spend with family and friends or spend it traveling and having fun. However, you can see that Iranians are expressing their full support, considering what mainstream media has been trying to portray. This is actually a very important message, and the images coming out of Iran is probably the most important images today, showing full support not just for Palestinians, but also for the Islamic Republic of Iran itself, because Islamic Republic of Iran values the Palestinian cause, has always been supportive of the Palestinian cause. And when you see people out here and where they're chanting slogans that they are ready whenever the leader wants them, they will be standing right by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. All of this is actually a very important show of solidarity and, of course, a show of unity and a show of force to Iran's adversaries.
We'll get back in touch with you, of course, for the next hours and the next report. Very good to have you. I'm going to go and talk to Maryam Ozache, who is with us in our studios. Maryam, you know international Quds, they hold profound meaning and significance in Iran, both as a political statement and as a reflection of the country's ideological foundations. Your take on that?
So, I mean, as you said, and as Gisu said, actually, it's been for over four decades, nearing five decades of Iranians participating in the Qudsi processions, as men, women, and children. And this year, what they're also doing is that they have the famous Sinwar sofa, they're basically putting sofas in various different places and reminding each other of the sofa where the leader Yahya Sinwar took his last breath while fighting the Zionist regime. And now we see men and women and children, they sit on the sofa, they pose, they show, because when you murder a leader, you can't kill resistance by murdering a leader. More and more people want to rise up to become that leader, because that leader becomes an example. And of course, Iran, it's not only Iran anymore, it's become an example for the world. We have non-Muslims across the world, we have Western people across the world who are willing to pay a very heavy price. I mean, it's really major, especially as non-believers, if you don't necessarily believe in an afterlife. It's really amazing to be able to pay such a heavy price, to be willing to risk your, going to jail, to be able to risk basically your entire future living in the West, because a lot of these people do not have a second citizenship. It's not that they can just go somewhere else in the world. So this movement has spread, and the more violence the Zionist regime uses, the more violence the U.S. uses, the more it's going to spread. And basically, they're basically shooting themselves in the foot. On the ground, they're murdering a lot. And as for those who consider murdering women and children a victory, and that is the Zionist regime, yes, in some way it can be considered a victory. Of course, they had this victory yesterday of murdering some 180 children in Gaza in one day. They have these victories of killing civilians and killing women and children, but in the bigger picture, they are losing. Now we have people across the world witnessing Yemenis, for instance, who were considered and are still considered one of the poorest nations on earth. What they've been doing, they have been standing up to the not only Israeli regime, but the Western hegemonic front. They have attacked the U.S. Ships that were facilitating genocide since 2023. They have attacked it over 170 times. And for this, for these impoverished people, for these oppressed people to be able to stand up, to be able to hit, we have this image of formidability, this image of invincibility of the U.S. regime, of the Zionist regime, that, small groups that the people who are not small in number, but they're very small in terms of, compared to the major powers, in terms of the money they have, in terms of the weapons they have. But even these groups, through unity, they have been able to do so much. Now, over 75% of the U.S. ships that are trying to continue to facilitate the genocide in Palestine, they're having to take the route, instead of the Suez Canal, they're having to take the route through South Africa, losing billions of dollars, costing the U.S. regime billions of dollars. And the world is witnessing that. And of course, the U.S., of course, they murder women and children. They bombed Yemen in a few hours, only in the past few days. But in a matter of a few hours, they hit Yemen 45 times. And they will continue doing so. But this is what's happening, is that when Yemenis always come out to the streets and they say, you cannot stop us from protecting the oppressed. And, when these smaller branches of the resistance, of the same party of resistance that Imam Khomeini talked about, of that dream of the oppressed, we have the American dream, and then we have the dream of the oppressed, who dream to have access to their own land, to their own resources, who dream to basically not be oppressed by major powers. And so we have a lot of these examples across the world. And because people are seeing how much even small pockets of resistance can do, no matter how impoverished they are, as long as they have faith, as long as they're willing to pay a price. And of course, what is constantly actually discussed and what people see more and more again is, though resistance has a price to be paid for, the price for not resistance is much higher. Because if, for instance, in the very beginning years of when Imam Khomeini called for Muslims of the world to take part in supporting the Palestinian people, if they had taken heed, if they had risen up, if they had threatened American points of interest in large numbers, you know, they wouldn't have to pay such a heavy price. Now, Syrians had to pay that price. Now, Lebanese had to pay that price. Now, people across the world, now American students are paying that price. Now, German students are paying that price. They're not, you know, all these major crackdowns of the police,
right?
Because for them, because they're basically speaking out against genocide. So now everybody across the world is paying a heavy price because they didn't stand up for Palestine and against this cancer of Zionist regime earlier. And now they realize that, yes, resistance, there is a price to be paid for resistance, but it's still a much lesser price, and it actually has an ambition that you actually can get somewhere through resistance, whereas through listening to the Western hegemonic front, through abiding by their rules, through playing in their books, you know, how many resolutions against the Zionist regime they have vetoed. When you play by the book, when you disarm yourself, when they threaten you to disarm, you know, and of course they have different methods. The Western hegemonic front, they will invade when they have the power to invade. When they don't have the power to invade, they negotiate. And negotiation is simply another weapon used by the Western hegemonic front to get people to disarm themselves when the U.S. cannot disarm them. But people across the world are understanding the value of resistance. They're seeing how they're treated for their peaceful resistance, and they're realizing that they need to unite more, that eventually they will need to have an armed resistance, just like the Yemenis do, just like the Lebanese do, just like Hamas did. And so this is what people of the world are realizing. So the movement will spread more and more beyond Iran.
Right, thank you, Maya. Let us go to Beirut and talk to Leila Hatoum. This is my final question to you. Thank you so much for being patient and staying with us for so long. Tell me something. The Israeli regime is right now doing whatever they can, whatever they in their power, to depopulate Gaza and Palestine. And at the same time, the entire world seems to just look the other way, or at least show indifference or nothing, no reaction. What can events like International Quds Day do to put an end and a stop to that?
Well, you can consider it as a small slap in the face to wake up and to understand that the situation in Gaza and Palestine is ongoing. The Israelis and the Americans were banking that people would be numb by now when they bombard them with all the sorts of atrocities, pictures, footage, etc., on a daily, hourly basis for nearly 17 months. Now it's almost a year and a half. People are bound, it's human nature, people are bound to not only shy away from looking at it anymore, they become insensitive towards the killing. People become numbers to them, just like in Iraq, just like in Libya, just like in Sudan. So at the end of the day, the Americans and the Israelis were banking on that. However, when we have mass rallies across the world uniting to actually remind people of what's happening and that this cause will never die, that's when the international population, I'm going to call it, will be reminded that no matter what, this is a story that will continue unless the Holocaust stops. So they have to actually get up on their feet and move and start doing action against their own governments or to pressure their governments to stop the Israeli occupation. So I do believe it's very vital and important to have this kind of basically Memorial Day, and at the same time rallies that keep gathering people to remind the international community that this cause will never stop. It will not go away. You cannot sweep it under the rug, and you cannot turn your face to the other way, because we will continue to remind you of it.
Thank you, Leila. Thank you for your patience and your participation in our program today. That was Leila Hatoum, editor-in-chief from MENA Uncensored. Very good to have you. And right now I have Ali Hussein, political activist, joining us from Sydney. Ali, very good to have you on the program. Tell me something. We were talking about the Abraham Accords with Leila Hatoum right now. Do you believe that these normalization deals, the so-called normalization deals, are just going to serve to to whitewash the ongoing war crimes in Gaza and also legitimize an apartheid regime?
I think it is an attempt to, in similar ways that Saudi Arabia is investing $600 billion in the US, or has at least pledged to, because it's trying to wash blood off their hands. But it is not in any way how to kind of, you can't wash things with money. So they are trying to whitewash, because if you look at the state of the Arab affairs, they're still moving forward. UAE is moving forward with more of their deals because they feel, at least in their wicked minds, in their weakened minds in these Arab countries who normalize, that the axis has been weakened to such a state that, you know, we saw many countries, especially Saudi, put deals on hold, and then now they're bringing them back into play. So they do not, we've seen how they are very much against Palestinian and Lebanese and the axis, and I don't see any future in which they will backtrack unless it hurts their economy. These deals are too important to them. They've normalized for way too long. They've normalized, you know, well before the Abraham Accords, from essentially Jordan having King Abdullah in place. This is someone who served in the British army, after, you know, in a quarter, and also serving with the Jordanian. But if you've served in the British army, sitting with Netanyahu, sitting with Trump, and the weak stance he had, and he was just all curled up, that is not someone who is going to back up what they say when they say they're going to support Palestinian people. This is someone who is going to fall at every opportunity he can to save himself, and he will fall under pressure every time. And that applies for the rest of the Arab nations, or these milquetoast Arab leaders.
I want to talk to you about something, the Trump's so-called peace to prosperity plan. Do you think that this was actually a blueprint for ethnic cleansing under the disguise of economic incentives?
I think so, because if you look at the way they're doing it, it was the same thing they tried to do with Biden earlier, just under a different guise, because Democrats and Republicans have very similar long-term interests. And the interest is Israel, because they've invested so much over the decades. It is a vested interest for them. And the peace to prosperity, we know it would, you know, try to implement the likes of the PA in Gaza. It would try to silence anyone who speaks up against the regime. It would just keep the kind of Palestinians and the very minority that we can see, because like in the protests that the West has tried to push, saying, oh, look how many people are anti-Hamas in Gaza. There was about 300 people out of 1.5 million. That is a very small percentage. So the likes of these 300 people are who Trump has in mind, because this is beyond normalization. This is ethnic cleansing. Again, this is wiping people from their homes. And either the same deal the Biden administration tried to make previously with Egypt, to go down south through the border. And that's the only way, is weakening a people and telling them, oh, we're going to bomb you anyway, there's nowhere to go. That's why he made that whole AI video that was absolutely decrepit and disgusting, of how he was out there partying with Elon and, you know, sipping drinks and having the time of his life in an area that he had seen, or at least in his own mind, had made his own Trump Towers in the Middle East.
Right, Ali, let us go on the ground and talk to our correspondent, Fatema Masumi, who is in Tehran right now. Fatema, tell us where exactly you are and what are you seeing?
Well, hello to you. Good morning to you. I'm here at the intersection of Enghelab and Balias Street, actually, as we're moving towards the University of Tehran with the crowd. Hundreds of thousands of people have gathered here today. I've taken to the streets to voice their solidarity with the Palestinian people and condemn the Israeli genocide that's happening in the besieged Gaza Strip. Before I go into the details about this day and what is happening around me, I have here with me a very special guest, the ambassador Iran, Venezuelan ambassador to Iran. And so I will ask him some questions and then return to you. My first question is, Soal avalam az
whether the same rallies are being held in Venezuela.
Well, let us listen to the live report, the speech by Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, Iranian parliament speaker, speaking to the crowd.
Nuestro gobierno revolucionario, encabezado por nuestro presidente Nicolás Maduro, junto al pueblo venezolano, asistirán a la Plaza de la Juventud, también para participar en una gran marcha y concentración en apoyo a Palestina en el día de Al-Quds y también en rechazo a toda esta política genocida que ha implementado el gobierno sionista de Israel en contra del noble pueblo de Palestina, Cisjordania, Gaza, donde ya van más de 50.200 asesinados. Eso no tiene otro nombre. Eso es un genocidio que hubo un breve receso. Hubo un breve receso del 19 de enero, pero otra vez el gobierno genocida de Israel continúa con esta arremetida allá en Gaza y en Palestina como tal.
Yes, today at 4 p.m. Venezuelan time, local time, the Bolivarian government in Venezuela, led by Nicolas Maduro, will take to the Maidan 2 square. They will have a demonstration there to show their solidarity with the Palestinian nation and condemning all the measures taken by the Israeli government against the people of Palestine, and condemn the murdering that could be translated into genocide, which is being continued. We, the Venezuelan nation, condemn the genocide perpetrated against the Palestinians that has so far killed thousands of, hundreds of thousands of innocent people in Palestine, and we also condemn these ongoing actions. My second question to Mr. Ambassador concerns the fact that over the past 1 or 2 years, many rallies have been held in Venezuela against the Zionist regime to support the Palestinian cause and the nation. Considering today's rallies and your presence in this rally, how important is it and why were we so concerned to take part in these rallies in Tehran in aligned with the demonstrations in Venezuela?
La presencia es Venezuela siempre ha apoyado a la causa palestina desde nuestro comandante Chávez y ha sido continuada por el presidente Nicolás Maduro. Y hoy, bueno, nosotros los venezolanos que nos encontramos aquí, en este caso mi persona, estamos aquí también apoyando pues a la causa palestina, al pueblo palestino, a la resistencia palestina y también rechazando las acciones genocidas que continúa haciendo el gobierno de Israel, el gobierno sionista de Israel, en contra del noble, heroico y guerrero pueblo de Palestina.
Yes, the issue of Palestine has always been a concern for Venezuelans, both since Mr. Chavez and then following him, Mr. Maduro, and the support is still being continued for Palestinians, and this will continue in the future. Our support for the Palestinian people, the Palestinian resistance, the Palestinian oppression, and the measures taken by the Zionist regime against the people in Palestine. And this will be the course against the genocide perpetrated by the Zionist regime. We do condemn this genocide.
Well, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, Iran's parliament speaker, is speaking to a crowd, and right now let us go to the University of Tehran and listen to his speech.
And the crackdown of the truth and right. We are the oppression against the society, specifically the Muslim nation, that has continued. all the 77 years of criminal affairs on one side since 1948. UN Security Council that this illegitimate cancerous and ominous fetus was generated until the operation that was carried out on 7th of October 2023, the storm of Aqsa, that was a turning point, without a doubt. The storm of Aqsa operation over the past 18 months was a lawful and legitimate action against the crimes and the murderous acts of that took over 77 years by the oppressive regime of the Zionist regime at the U.S. and the U.K. And I want to highlight this fact that this operation was a very specific operation of its kind against such a huge amount of crime and murderous acts, and the response to that that the Palestinian nation carried out. The resistance front and the nation and the Palestinian nation have not been just confronted with this, with Israel. This is something that the dear nation of Iran should be wary about. If Palestine and Palestinians and the resistance front were just confronting the Zionist regime, rest assured that this regime could have never been able to withstand them. They would not even be able to withstand them and, for 1 week, because this regime is a borrowed regime. Israel, without the U.S., has no power and might inside itself by it intrinsically. The fact is that today, the Zionist regime is the murdering machine of the hegemonic power and the criminal and the murderous U.S. And it is them that, by supporting, by providing weaponry, by providing intelligence support, and by ensuring political support to this ominous regime and dirty and filthy regime, they have protected it in the region. For sure, there have been and there are other players in other countries as well that play a part in this. I don't want to highlight them. I don't want to mention them. But specifically, I do stress the fact that the British, the UK people have, the UK government has played a crucial role in this regard. The world of Islam, once again, has been stopped by the mischievous UK in the issue concerning Palestine. If we say that the relationship between the US and the Zionist regime is a cooperation, is a partnership, is an agreement, if we can term it this way, in a way that a supporter supports its supportee, then we can say that the relationship between Israel and the UK is a father-child relationship. The UK wants, the UK government wants to materialize the unfinished project that, if, that we can say has been going on since First World War, that it was initiated in the First World War, and until its ownership on its annexation of the Palestinian land in 1948 and formation of this World Zionist Organization by done, the interim government was done by U.S., by U.K. It is the same U.K. that is planning to finish its unfinished project. All these indicate the fact that today we have to say the hegemony power system and the global arrogance against Palestine and the resistance front is standing. Not just undermining the laws and rules, international rules, but also they do not observe the laws that govern wartime. They do not even they trample upon all the rules that govern even wartime. They are doing what they can with all their might and technologies and prowess, and they're an inhuman detonations, bombs, in whatever they can, they're attacking the resistance front and the Palestinian people. But it's interesting to know that is still the resistance front, as you saw after the ceasefire. The resistance front has not reacted. It is preparing its reaction, has the power to react. We saw how they engage in negotiations with might and power, and how they freed their captives from their prisons, and how they delivered the Israeli hostages. And the same, what has been going on over 77 years, what has been the course over the past 77 years, is that the Zionist regime broke the ceasefire. We saw that people in Yemen responded. We saw that the resistance front in other places responded. That the Supreme Leader says that we have no proxies in other regions. The fact that proxyism does not make sense, it means that the Islamic nation, the warriors against that are withstanding against their oppression by their own. We have, of course, paid huge prices in this regard. In this way, we have had many huge and respectable martyrs like Martyr Soleimani, Martyr Hassan Nasrallah, Sid Hashim Safieddin, Martyr Haniyeh, Martyr Senwar. We have had martyrs like Muhammad Zayf. These are some of the prices. And if you remember the way they perpetrated those crimes and murders, today what matters is that against a world war of the hegemonic power, they are withstanding this. Look, review the past 77 years, the wars that took place since 1948 and in 1973, that over five or six wars took place, broke out between Arabs and the Zionist regime. In all those years, lands were occupied and defeats were had to be tolerated. But they went through peace processes, but again, pieces and peace talks were broken by the Zionist regime, and they never honored the talks. Today, I want to mention a second fact, and that if we look at things through a realistic lens, the Zionist regime, both in strategic field and in tactical fields, into reaching its goals that have been defined by the U.S., the UK, and the Zionist regime, it has failed in all grounds. I want to highlight this fact. They put the Zionist regime, they created the Zionist regime in this region, they put money in it in order to safeguard their own gendarme in the region, so that it could preserve their hegemonic powers' interests. They wanted to create an establishment that would become a pattern for other regions. Through their own point of view, it could materialize. They could ensure the existence of all Zionists in that region. Through their point of view, create a democracy and destroy and annihilate the Palestinian nation. But what we see today is that, look what's happening in the arena, in reality, what's happening now in Palestine. The truth is that, the fact is that, the parasitic life of the Zionist regime has become more severe than ever. If you allow me, I would like to mention the fact that their life is in a way that today they were supposed to ensure the U.S. interests and resources in the region. But today, we see that the U.S. has to pay the price for keeping this regime on its feet. As you could remember, 18 months ago when the storm of Aqsa, Tufan al-Aqsa, took happen, when the U.S. President and Secretary of State traveled to Tel Aviv, what did they say? What they said was that today, if the Israeli regime was not there, we would have to create another a similar regime like Israel in the region. So look at their point of view. Look what they're doing for their own interests, to safeguard their own interests. Now, has the regime been able to preserve those interests in the region? Never. Because today, the Zionist foreign secretary has told one of his counterparts in the region that when I, at the onset of the storm of Aqsa, I entered Tel Aviv, I saw that the army was disproportionate, and you know there was an agony and disorder in the among the ranks of the army over there. Today, all the equipment have been provided, and consultants have been provided for the army in Tel Aviv, supported by U.S. Even the internal integrity has severe problems. They are being kept alive by the direct support of the U.S. They have to deal with their internal issues by direct U.S. support. Today, considering security, people that have been living in settlements created over the past 70 years, all of them have been evacuated. No one wants to return to their houses there. This is one of the results of their security, of the security they created. Today, if you look, everyone that talks against, everyone doubts the Zionist regime in the occupied lands, they have this horror because they feel insecure. All the U.S. said was that the Zionist regime, or the Zionist regime said was that Israel is going to be the paragon of security, is the birthplace of security. But today, immigration has become down, vice versa. This is an indication of the this is not saying that they have been successful in the military field, but also in economic affairs they have been a failure. We do understand that Zionist investors and capitalists would do their best to empower the Zionist regime, but today there is no future considered for the future of the Zionist regime. The investors have no future with their capital, even if they're closely linked with the regime. There is no security for investment in there. So we have to understand that back immigration and international conditions, consider this fact. Our great Imam in 19, around 54, after 15, after that events, when he returned to, when he addressed the Zionist regime, at that time he condemned the Zionist regime and condemned the U.S. as its biggest supporter. And after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he named the last Friday of Ramadan as the Quds Day. And now, look, the issue of Palestine has become a paramount issue throughout the world, a concern for humanity. And all people that seek freedom and people that understand what humanity is. Now, look, the U.S. president is cutting budgets for universities that support Palestinians and talk against the Zionist regime. He is cutting their support, their finances, down with the U.S. to highlight here is that if we do believe that the Zionist regime has been a failure in all its efforts, not in the military. Now, look, in my visit during the highlight, during the most intensive times in Beirut, that Martin Nasrallah was martyred, there I witnessed Hezbollah boys and guys working under serious conditions. I saw that Hezbollah was alive. In the war front, Hezbollah fighters were fighting, as you saw that they withstood over 40 days, and the Zionist army, with the direct support of the U.S., could not annex even 1 meter of the Lebanese land. They could not occupy Gaza. They did occupy Gaza, but they could not fully control over it until the last day. The warriors withstood and fought and forced the enemy to retreat. And considering political arenas, they failed too. This is a reality that today in the combined war and cognitive war, the Zionist regime and its allies cannot say that the resistance front has failed. No, the resistance front is alive. Even today, we do witness that warriors of the Islamic Jihad are sending missiles to their missiles are hitting Bulgarian airport. When they actually broke the ceasefire, they showed resistance. These are based on beliefs from Islamic traditions and divine traditions. So the people, the one that has lost in long-term goals and strategic policies is the U.S. and the U.K. And U.S. and the Zionist regime. And we do not doubt that, as our beloved Imam said, as our supreme leader has stressed on this fact, all these crimes have been carried out by the direct support of the U.S. And it is them that are acting by double standard, that their actions contradict their words. It doesn't make any change who comes in power in the U.S. The previous president of the U.S., the one that preceded in war, even the one that is already at the helm of the U.S. presidency, all of them act dubiously. This is the nature of the hegemonic power, hegemonic system. Our great people do understand that negotiation with threat means pretending to negotiate in order to voice one's and impose one's wills against the other party, or us, that is us. Here's the word to God against oppressive powers. U.S. leaders want not only to secure, to undermine the Iranian nation's economic interest, but they would also like to take our welfare facilities from us. So this is why they start talking about negotiations. What they mean by negotiation is dictating Iran's disarmament. But our nation and the Iranians do fully understand that negotiation for accepting, for mandatory acceptance of the enemy's will, is the beginning of war. No person, no nation in the world that is wise and sensible of sound mind would never accept such a thing. God is great. God is great.
In
Peterson, correspondent letters sent to Iran, there was no sensible statesman regarding the removal of sanctions against Iran. The U.S. behavior in this regard was the behavior, was the disposition of a bullying U.S. The U.S. president would not even honor its, you know, a good behavior with its allies. When it talks to them like a bully, as you saw that, it talked to them like an owner and that someone that, and peasants. But such actions cannot be done against the Iranian people. They cannot be treated and they cannot be bullied, the Iranian nation. Down with the U.S. The Islamic Republic of Iran, in the world that power talks, has been acting both as an oppressed and also a strong player. We rely on our people, specifically the integrity and belief of these people. We rely on it. And on the second hand, we are leaning on the educated and brave leader of our nation, and we are supported by the prowess of our armed forces and our defense power. Believer armed forces, revolutionary armed forces that are also creative and like warriors that would seek martyrdom, experience, and always prepared. The besiegees, the beloved besiegees that are acting upon Islamic traditions and Quran teachings and the Ahlul Bayt culture and based on beliefs that will not be changed over time and will not even do ingal. And we do believe that in the future that the success will be theirs. By this belief they have stood in the front, in the arena, and they are not afraid of any kind of threat. But the Americans do recognize the fact how much vulnerable they are. If they make the mistake of attacking the Iranian territory, that would be a sparkle